From the banks of the Grand River, high above the gorge, this is the Buzzer Pod. New releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations, indie music. With guests from the True North, from the West Coast to the East Coast, and across the pond and down under. Now, here's Shay.
Hey, hello, Shay here, the Buzzer Pod on Air Indie, episode number 4. Welcome and enjoy. So what was Buddy Holly doing today in 1959? Well, today in 1959, Holly made his last recordings, Peggy Sue Got Married, and Crying, Waiting, Hoping among them. He was alone in his New York City apartment with an acoustic guitar and tape recorder. Coral Records released overdub recordings after his death. Our guest today is Addie Hamilton. Addie is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter, and from the age of 15, she was in the studio songwriting. She is based out of Los Angeles. Her music has earned prominent placements in television, commercials, and cinema, and her first record found placement on network television with a featured vocal. Addie is an internationally published model. Vogue Online recognized Addie twice before the age of 18. Her new single, Tangerine, released early January, and her latest single, Valentine, will be out in time for Valentine's Day. We will listen to that track on today's episode. Her distinctive vocals bring an original brand of sultry roots to her music. Hey, Addie, hello and welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you for joining in on the podcast today.
Hi, Shay. How are you? I like the intro. I should have you follow me around town so you could always introduce me.
Oh, thank you. I would say, you know what? When you have a guest that's that accomplished, the intro is difficult to say the least, because you got so much that you got to summarize in a quicker introduction. But you've done amazing since you got in. How did you get into music?
Well, my first introduction was actually by finding my great grandmother's record player. I come from quite a loud family. I'm the last of 7 children. However, there wasn't any music growing up in my household, and I was always fascinated with antiques. And I was drawn by this one end table that I found, which it was all closed up and turned around. So I always thought it was an end table. There's decorations on it. And then I opened it up and figured out it was her record player. And my great grandmother had collected a lot of her early swing, even some Latin music. And from there, I just became immersed in the pop culture of a lot of those vintage sounds, and it started a whole fascination with it.
And what was the favorite artist that you found in her collection?
Well, the very first record I pulled out and played was a Peggy Lee record, and I totally judged the book by the cover. I grabbed it because I thought it had the most beautiful album artwork. And I believe it was a compilation and had a lot of her big hits on it. And I remember also listening to a lot of Benny Goodman and Xavier Cugat, which is a funny story because the rumor has it that the last apartment I lived in Los Angeles, he lived there with Charo. I don't know if it's true or not, but I like to believe that it is, just because my great-grandmother loved him so much from all of the records I know she collected from him. And she actually lived down in Mexico with her sister. They had a little house during Prohibition and would go down there to party. So I think that's where they got a lot of it wasn't just Xavier Cugat. He was pretty well known in the States too, but a lot of Latin and Mexican music she had in her collection, and some Delta blues.
That's awesome. So is your great-grandmother still with us?
No, she isn't. I met her as a baby, but she passed soon after.
Do you still have the record player?
Yeah, I do. It's in my parents' house in my room. I made my brothers lug it upstairs and put it in there.
Oh, that's pretty cool. But vinyl's actually getting more of a format. A lot of people and artists are looking for a vinyl and publishing vinyl. So you could be using it a lot more than you think.
Yeah, I have a huge collection. It's in storage right now. I'm kind of in the middle of figuring out where my next move is going to be. I'm not worried about it, but I was able to just get vinyl for the first time with my voice on it, which was pretty awesome. That was with the last release I'm sure we'll talk about.
Well, that's awesome. You know, the love that you have for vintage is present in everything, from the cover art to your music to your spreads in the magazines. How did you, is this just something that just happened, or was it a gradual introduction into it, into vintage? You said that you were interested in antiques early on in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think about some of my early memories and like toys I had as a kid, and even those were old looking. My mom always had knickknacks around the house, and she's not necessarily a huge antique collector per se, but she, you know, when it's good, it's good. And if it's new or old, she has great taste. So I kept finding myself being drawn visually to those things as a child. And then my family has a big history in cars, in hot rods. So since I was maybe in junior high, I would always go with my mom or my brother to hot rod shows, and I started loving old cars. And then I found music through my great grandmother's collection. And then within a year or two, I started working at a great vintage shop down in my hometown and appraised vintage and antiques. And yeah, I mean, I love design. It doesn't have to be vintage. It doesn't have to be a certain era, though there are definitely years that I find myself drawing to more than others. But if it's good, it's good. Like I said earlier, I love new stuff, and I've definitely never wanted to make or at least now, I don't want to make a record that sounds 100% out of the 1930s. You know, I love a lot of modern producers and modern sonics and sounds that are definitely new and up and coming.
So the vintage that you wear, is it something that you found in vintage shops?
Oh, everywhere. Flea markets, mostly. Sometimes antique shops, but most of the time it's at flea markets. I haven't been going this year, but I try and stay out of vintage stores unless I'm really trying to find something special, just because I know where they buy it and I can buy it for the same wholesale they do. So it's fun for me to kind of dig.
Yeah, but it is fun. It's something I enjoy very much. I do a lot of vintage, and the credits that you've done are very diverse, and also quite a number of them, including Showtime Shameless. You've been on a credit with MTV The Hills and NBC's The Good Place.
Quite diverse projects and all quite successful. I'd like to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I love writing music, whether it's something that's more towards my project and maybe a little bit more jazz oriented, or if it's completely the opposite and it's a horror film or a kid's jingle. So Patrick, my manager, I actually met at my old apartment. He lived in as well, in the same building. And he introduced me to a lot of great songwriters and publishers. And I've just been writing for TV and film along with my own project with him since I was, I think, 18 or 19, I moved in. And my first time I wrote for TV and film was when I was 15 or 16. And that started by going through a program called REAPMO down in Orange County, which teaches Berklee College of Music's curriculum, and then does a big like seminar with these A&Rs, and we were able to get a placement on a show then, which led to the Emmy nomination.
Yeah, you attended that before you graduated from junior high.
From high school.
From junior year of high school. Before.
Yes. Yeah, I was in the subjects that I loved in high school, I was great at and very dedicated to and always doing extra work. But I tried to make my schedule to where I was at the school at least as I could be, especially my junior and senior year, because I had already been working with a publishing company and driving up to Los Angeles from Orange County for sessions after school.
Yeah, the Grammy you were nominated in 2019 was for your contribution to the spoken word artist Siku Anders, correct?
Yes.
What was it like, that project, working with?
Oh, that was amazing. So the last release I had, Hollywood Calling, was also with that same orchestra that worked with Seiku and was recorded the same week. So I came in originally as one of their featured artists to write Hollywood Calling. It turned out to be Hollywood Calling. And then I was so fascinated with the orchestra themselves and what they were doing as a project that I stayed on just as one of the chorus girls and ended up helping write a part of that, one of the songs or maybe two of them that was on that record, and was able to lend vocals with a lot of very talented girls on there. But what they did, which was so interesting, I think it was about 50 people, and they rented out a big warehouse, and there was like a bagpipe player, there was a harmonica player, my friend Christian was banging sheet metal, they had recorded an actual cement mixer to keep time. So that was really,
wow,
amazing. Yeah, it was an amazing project to be a part of. And so that Seiku Andrews project bled into the Los Angeles Suite album as well. It was a lot of the same people and recorded, I think, within a week or two in the same spot.
Yeah, it sounds like a very creative project.
Yeah, it was very improvisational too. They had gotten a hold of me the day before asking if I was free. And what they did is I walked in and I had no idea how many people were going to be a part of it, which was so amazing to walk into a room with that many talented instrumentalists. I thought it was going to be like a small string section or something. And they gave us a theme, which was Los Angeles, to write about. They said to just write a verse or a melody or whatnot. So I sent over a lyric idea and some chords. And then the conductor wrote a whole piece overnight to it. And then I walked in that morning, and I think 20 or 40 minutes before we recorded, they had me write the rest of the song. And they did that with a lot of the artists on the album.
And that was the String Theory album?
Yes, that was for the Los Angeles Suite album. And for Seiku's album, I'm not sure if he and the arranger had already written or if that was also very improvisational. I know as far as the background vocals and the lyrics for Us Girls, that was all improv.
And your modeling. You've been featured on The Powder Room, Italian Vogue, Adore, Pinup, Elegant, and Accents. How did you get involved with that?
I would never really call myself a model, but I definitely enjoy dressing up, and I've always had very artistic, talented friends, a lot of photographers, and so it's kind of just made its way. Sometimes music will introduce me to a magazine and I'll be able to do something like that, or it could even be vice versa. Maybe it'll be something I'm doing with set design or styling and then they listen to my music. So it kind of just came through friends, really. I've never tried to model. I've never sent out a resume to agencies. Not that I'm opposed to it, but music has definitely been my main focus, and even doing more behind the scenes things like set design or styling is almost a little bit more fulfilling than modeling to me, unless it has something to do with my music. If I'm creating album artwork or maybe doing an interview that's tied to a photo feature, that would be amazing. So it's all fun. I have a lot of different passions that thankfully connect to each other.
Well, it definitely happened naturally. Your influencer, Peggy Lee, Betty Goodman, and Eartha Kitt, I can definitely see that in listening to your music. Is there any other influences you want to talk about, Peggy Lee, Eartha Kitt, and Betty Goodman, and how they influenced you?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would say they were like my first inspirations because they were all a part of that collective that my great grandmother had in her record player. I love Eartha Kitt as a performer. So that opened up a lot of ideas regarding dance for me. And then when it comes to inspirations, even in the performance world, I love Bob Fosse, and I'd love to incorporate some of his choreo or something inspired by him into a stage routine and performance. I love Chet Baker's delivery. I just love how smooth he is as a vocalist and as a trumpet player. Chet Baker Sings is definitely one of my favorite albums, both of them. And when it comes to sonics and arranging, I love Danny Elfman. I love Tom Waits. I've been listening to a lot of Dorothy Ashby. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. She's an old harp player, but
no, I'm not.
She's great. I feel like a lot of people don't know about her, but she kind of gets into that, what's the word? Like a lot of, like Lionel Hampton would kind of be in the same world. Like it's almost Exotica. If you've ever listened to any early Exotica, it kind of reminds me of that. So she's someone I've discovered, I think, within the past 2 years. And somebody else who's really inspiring to me, not necessarily music, but visually, which is definitely intertwined, is Busby Berkeley. I love his visuals and would definitely have always loved and even tried to do something like that for videos.
And would you say that most of your music is inspired by the 1930s to 60s era of jazz, swing, and R&B?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of things end up sounding that way. I think my vocal does a lot of it because I've listened to so many jazz singers, and I think that when I was developing as a singer earlier, it just grew into a jazz voice. And I love brass. So a lot of people, when they hear a jazz vocal and they'll hear brass or maybe even a really lush, like, string arrangement, they automatically put it to an era. But I don't necessarily, sometimes, but I don't necessarily try and sit in a studio and be like, okay, this needs to be from 1942.
And what do you think of Glenn Miller?
I love Glenn Miller. I love
he's
Glenn.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, he's great. He's great to dance to. I used to do a lot of solo Charleston and Lindy and swing, and I love to dance to him. I love Artie Shaw too. Are you familiar with Artie Shaw?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah. His nightmare has always been a great one. It's so like eerie.
And the next coming up, we're going to be listening to your track Tangerine, that was released early January. And can you tell us a bit about what went into the making of that?
Yeah, so I worked with these amazing guys on the East Coast, Todd White and Ethan Mentzer. And I believe the first time we wrote it was when I was in Virginia visiting them both in Todd's studio. And the word actually came first. To be honest, I wish I could tell you that I had like some deep poetic reason to choose that word, but it was actually a flavor of chapstick I had in my pocket.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was. And I looked at it. And now I actually think it's funny enough. I think Benny Goodman may have written, it was Benny Goodman or one of those 30s composers may have written Tangerine, a song called Tangerine, which I didn't know then, but now I do anyway. So I think when we wrote it, it was a little over a year ago. And I remember we were on a walk taking a break from writing another song. And I just loved how it slipped off the tongue. And so I said, why don't we write something about Tangerine? And then from there, really came the like lyric. And it's very abstract. I'm not sure if you've had an opportunity to listen to it yet, but I can talk more after we do.
Yeah, I have. It's a great, great tune. The lyrics are very abstract, and it shows that the listener can connect their own meaning to them. Like, it's very open to interpretation by the listener. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. I mean, I have my own thoughts about what the lyrics mean to me, of course, but I don't know. I'm almost apprehensive to share them because I think it's so important for everybody to draw their own conclusion.
Okay. Well, we're going to listen to the track and we'll continue chatting with Addie after we listen to Tangerine.
The road that runs from wrong.
quote that Patrick, your manager, said is that Tangerine is a reminder to focus on the beauty in life and to believe that miracles can happen. What do you feel about that?
Yes. Yeah. Kind of the picture that I'm painting was being in a world that's all black and white, and you're the only one who can see the other colors. You can see in red, and you can see the blues and the pinks, and you can see the tangerine, and but nobody else sees them. And I really try and convey that yearning for understanding in the lyrics, where it says, you know, that nobody, it, when you listen to the chorus, it says that nobody quite knows. They ask me what I mean. When I say tangerine, they ask me what I mean. So it's really about keeping faith, because I do believe miracles can happen, and I'm always trying to see positively, and sometimes I'm the black sheep in that. So yeah, it's believing in miracles, keeping faith when the world around you says otherwise.
Timely. Very timely. You know, and Tangerine has been, a song called Tangerine has been released by several artists. One notably Led Zeppelin released a song, and Herb Alpert.
Oh, great. There was a lot of Herb Alpert in my great-grandmother's collection, and my grandfather loved him.
I loved them too.
Yeah, Taste of Honey. I mean, I don't care how many times it's played. I love it.
So the visual aspect, visual arts aspect that goes into being an artist. How important is that to you as an artist? And what do we see in your work of the passion that you have for the visual arts side of your musical side?
Well, it's definitely important to me. I think because I can so clearly see how I would like others to be able to enjoy my music visually when it comes to music videos and album artwork, that I definitely always have ideas and am the one to put things together as far as my artwork goes. And I have great friends, my friend Fabian Fiotto, who shot on film for the Tangerine cover, and then my friend Daniel Luna, who does great set design. They both help me out a lot, and we kind of take turns helping each other on different shoots. So maybe one week Fabian and I are going to be doing a set design with Daniel on a Netflix photo shoot or something like that. So I have kind of garnered, I'm not going to say a huge scale, but definitely a big interest in set design and theatrics. If you look at a lot of those early shows and even vaudeville, I look at that and there's still a presence of that, I think, in entertainment in LA, but it's something that is so fun and definitely needs to be shared more to, you know, our current world. So you'll see a lot of that, especially in my live shows. There'll be choreo, there will be set design, the band will be dressed. It's going to be very much an experience.
Big show, like yeah, a theater maybe. Production.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe, you know, maybe one song, it could be the exact opposite and very stripped down, but haunting at the same time. You know, it doesn't always have to be super glittery. It could be very real too, but no matter what, I think it needs to take you in some sort of world, and it the visual has to match the audio.
So do you enjoy performing live?
Yes, I love it. I haven't in a while. I've been mostly writing for TV and film. And then this past April, I was hoping to record a jazz album, which has been postponed. And I was set to tour with the orchestra in Europe this past summer. So 2020 and 2021 for me was supposed to be a lot of shows for both my personal project as well as the Los Angeles Suite project. So I'm hoping that can still happen in 2021. And I'm definitely not short on ideas. So we will see how this next year plays out.
Yeah, but a lot of people are waiting for that as well. But you're keeping busy and you're putting out music, which are all positive things. You talked about your collaborations with your friends, which has added to the presentation of your art and music and cover art and that. The other collaborations you've done are quite substantial, one being Rune Westberg and another, Desi Valentine. And you also worked on a co-write with on Hypnotized with Jason G. Spice. What was your favorite collaboration and why?
I love them all. Like I told you earlier, sometimes I'll go into a writing session and maybe it's for another artist project or maybe it's even like a jingle, you know, but I just genuinely love people. I love characters, even if it's somebody who you might think very, you know, quote unquote normal. I just find people fascinating. I think that's part of growing in a big family. Everyone in my family is so different and I love to see how they react differently to things, both big and small. So it's just so fun to be in a creative environment and I really enjoy my work. I really enjoy being physically present in a room and creating something with somebody else. I'm trying to teach myself to be better with admin stuff and doing things on my computer this year. But for me, it's if I have something scheduled in the books and I have even if I could have like two writes a day, I love coming home after that creative exhaustion and feeling like I was really able to contribute. So I can't really say that I have a favorite. I mean, some sessions I'll go into and it could be a very prominent songwriter, but I could be having an off day or they could be having an off day and the song just isn't so good. Or maybe it could be the exact opposite. It could be somebody that I'd never met before and it's, you know, they could be relatively new or I'm very new at it. And then it's something that's just great. So it always changes. That's great. There's always new music to be made.
So every collaboration is different then.
Yep. I mean, one thing that was a completely new experience that I hadn't done quite like before was the Los Angeles Suite album. Just having something that was that grandeur and that many people involved, yet literally being so spontaneous and collaborative that the songs we were recording, not even just playing, but recording, had not been fully written until minutes before. That was exhilarating. And you really felt like you contribute in something. I've been able to play with, you know, larger groups before, and sometimes you're reading somebody else's music or you kind of need to be patient and respect others and know when to speak or know when your line is. But this last project was just so fun because you really felt like you had an input and were heard.
Well, it probably added to the success of the release.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so. It's a great album to listen to. Each song is different from the other because they really chose unique artists from every genre to include.
So next up, we're going to listen to your track that released in February, Valentine. It's timely release for that special day. Is there any thing you want to tell the listeners about that?
Not necessarily. I'm so excited about it. I just got a new mix from Ethan this week, and he really took it to a whole entire different field. So it's a treat to listen to, and I hope they enjoy it.
So next up, Valentine. Enjoy.
Struck by your blue eyes, bewildered, transfixed by, hypnotized, those blue eyes could kill you. Oh, is this some kind of nightmare? Oh, or just some waking dream. Oh, oh, I'd give my life, oh, oh, to be with my loved life, sweet
So what future projects do you have in place? Like, what can we expect for you next year? Or is it up in the air right now because of COVID? Like, have you made any plans or tentatively plans to tour or collaborate with anybody?
Well, the Los Angeles Suite album is still technically postponed. However, I'm not sure if they're going to be moving forward with that or not. Last I heard that it's just a postpone until COVID kind of clears out. And I don't have any shows yet. However, I'm sure that'll also take place. I have definitely been writing writing a lot myself and not as many co-writes. A few here and there with close friends. But I was also able to co-write via Zoom. So that's new and fun. And I've been teaching myself Pro Tools, so I'm excited to give my listeners some body of work that's more 100% my writing on it, because in the past a lot of it was co-writes, which I love as well, but I think, you know, in isolation you're just bound to do everything yourself. So I'm trying to learn a little bit how to wear that production hat. Not that I necessarily think that my producing will be on the final record, but it needs to get to a point to where I can at least garner some good demos. So that's what I've been focusing on. And yeah.
That sounds exciting. I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us. Before we go, Addie, can you tell us where to find your music?
Yes. So you can go to my website. It's www.addiehamiltonmusic.com. You can also follow me on Instagram. My social media is Hamilton Addy. And you can find me on all of the music platforms as well. So I love to talk to people. I'll be doing a fun project soon involving some handwritten letters and postcards for some releases, which is so fun for me. And I hope that I can connect to people more personally through doing that, which I've done before. And I truly enjoy doing that. So keep in touch with me on social media, and there may be a P.O. box coming out.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you, Addie, for joining our pod today. It was a wonderful chat. Listeners, tune in to Addie Hamilton. Her music is great. And also follow her on the social media she mentioned.
Yay. Thank you so much, Shay.
Yeah, thank you. You were awesome.
Well, thank you all for joining in on our episode talking with Addie Hamilton. Next episode, we have rapper Happy Walters from Minnesota, and we're going to listen to his breakout track, Paid Vacations, and that will happen on January 26th. So see you at the pod next time. Cheers.